Welcome to the 99th episode of Kino Lefter, your favorite Canadian socialist movie podcast. I'm your host, Evan, at McDonald Tweets, and I hope that you had a restful holiday season. Of course, we took a little break from the show, a well-deserved break after some blockbuster episodes that many people are saying are the best podcasts released in 2020. It was in all of the podcast magazines, and I'm looking forward to getting a daytime Emmy for that work. So I missed a couple hits in 2020, obviously, because I was taking a break. And what better time than January 2021, the year of our Lord, to go through just a few of them. So if you've looked at the title of this episode, it's very clear that I'm going to be talking about Wonder Woman 1984, of course, based on the famous George Orwell book about being banned from Twitter. That's where the laugh track is going to come in, Jamar. Everyone's really pleased with that joke. This movie is yet again directed by Patty Jenkins, starring Gal Gadot, Chris Pine, Pedro Pascal, the guy from The Mandalorian, and Kristen Wiig as the Cheetah. So, there's quite a bit to get into with this film, but I think it's important to start off in a good way. So, of course, I want to start opening up my notebook with the opening monologue of Wonder Woman 1984 as delivered by yours truly, Diana Prince. Some days my childhood seems so very far away, and others you can almost see it. The magical land of my youth, like a beautiful dream of when the whole world felt like a promise, and the lessons that lay ahead yet unseen. Looking back, I wish I had listened, understood more closely. And sometimes you can't see what you're learning until you come out the other side. Wow. I know I was really impacted by that. And once those words were kind of said, I kind of had a feeling for the kind of movie I was going to be watching. So it would be very easy just for me to rag on this movie for like an hour. But I don't want to. Obviously, there is some weird bad stuff in this movie, quite a bit of it, probably most of it, but I have to say I've seen this movie twice now thanks to the wonderful patrons at patreon.com/kinolefter, where I have to pay for this movie in premium VOD. And the first time I watched it, I was kind of taken aback by how like stupid and weird and nonsensical it is. However, on my second viewing of the movie, once the sort of initial shock went away, I just let myself have a bit of fun with it. Like, you know, I'm not expecting, you know, a good movie. I'm not expecting a great movie. I'll just see what it has for me. And of course, it is a important piece of literature. Okay, it has a lot to say about street harassment, body snatching, and not being greedy and getting things that you want. I have some positive things to say about this movie. I have plenty of negative things to say about this movie. In terms of like trying to extract a larger political meaning from the movie, I think that is a fool's errand. Because I think, much like a lot of studio blockbusters, this is a written by committee hodgepodge of ideas. I mean, you could just take the opening monologue that I read a little bit and realize that, but I think it's important to bring you through the beats of Wonder Woman 1984, explore them in depth, and just see what is going on with this movie. Is it good? Is it bad? I don't know. So obviously the opening monologue is very bad. Opening monologues traditionally not very good. So what's going on in the opening is there's a tournament on Themyscira, Wonder Woman's island home, also known as Paradise Island. And So in typical Wonder Woman origin stories, this is a tournament that decides who's like the champion of Themyscira, and then they go out into the world of man and they're like an ambassador for the Amazons. So if that were in the first film, it would have made sense and had stakes. Like Wonder Woman, like her becoming a superhero is on the line, so she needs to do this. But in this film, they decide to have child Diana competing against like adult Amazons and like schooling them, which I mean, I understand that Wonder Woman is a demigod. Obviously her father is Zeus and her mother is Hippolyta, but like having a child like being like super strong and everything kind of takes away from any sort of relatability that someone could have with Wonder Woman. And I mean, this is a problem with the Wonder Woman character generally, is that like people are afraid to like give her flaws or interesting conflicts because she always just needs to be perfect, kind of like Superman. And I also thought that it was a pretty big mistake to have child Diana competing in this tournament, as opposed to like what I thought would have made sense, like a young woman Diana, maybe like, you know, in her 20s or like a teenager or something. And it's like, you know, this is the first time she's trying to like prove herself. You know, maybe it's like also a fight with like her and her mother, which like is evident in the first film, which I think made the first movie very good. Controversial opinion, I think the first Wonder Woman movie is very good. I know it's epic to say that it's bad, but I've always enjoyed it. I think the third act of that movie is kind of bad, but it hits its emotional beats very well. I think that Gal Gadot is a pretty good actress for Diana in that first film. And it takes its sort of inspiration from the Richard Donner superhero movies, Superman movies, in like a nice sort of restrained way, where it's like obvious like the thematics of those movies, especially the first film, are present. But a lot of like the tongue in cheek sort of humor of it isn't really there. But we get a full dose of it in this film. So it's very strange what happens in the opening tournament, because of course Diana falls off her horse after getting hit in the face with a tree branch, which is very funny. So she decides to cheat. So she like misses one of the little arrow targets that she's supposed to hit, and then she takes a shortcut, and that helps her like get to the end of the tournament faster than anybody. And then she gets stopped by Antiope, of course, played by Robin Wright. And this is like the most heavy-handed stretch of dialogue in the movie, where I tried to get all of it down, but I think I missed some of it. It's like, you can't be a winner because you're not ready to win. You don't know the truth. No true hero is born of lies. And it's like, man, I don't have time to intake all of these meanings. Like, make your movie about, like, I don't know. Some people, I don't know, I don't want to say just weirdos, but like I hear this critique sometimes where people are just like, a movie needs to have like one theme. And it's like, no, you can talk about whatever you want in a film, but like communicate it in an elegant way, I think is my concern. So yeah, the opening action scene, it is literally just like, here are all the things that you need to think about in the movie. And it's like, okay, whatever. So we time jump ahead to 1984. Obviously, Diana fought in World War One, so now she's hanging out in the present. And don't worry, later on we get an explanation of what Wonder Woman was doing in World War Two. So the music, the vibes, the fashion, the colors, it's all very like Superman 2, not the Richard Donner version. So like Wonder Woman saves a woman from being hit by a car. This is also intercut with a commercial with Maxwell Lord, who is the main villain of this film, who runs a Black Gold Cooperative, quote, the first oil company run by the people and for the people, which is great. I love that. That's so stupid. And then we go into this mall sequence, which I think has been talked about quite a bit because it is extremely stupid. So the first shot is like two fat American guys eating hamburgers. And obviously, I don't really like the body shaming going on here. And it is just such a like dated way of trying to communicate that, like, oh, the 80s was all about excess. Here's a couple of big fat people in a mall. And it's like, obviously, like, obesity is like, you know, I don't want to say a health crisis, but like it is a serious health concern. But a lot of that is created by like the fast food industry and like people living in food deserts. And like, you know, there it's a systemic issue, which of course is made a sort of cultural personal issue in this film, because we don't need to care about, you know, why that's going on. So there's a robbery going on in this mall, and the guys robbing this jewelry store for its like black market goods are extremely funny. There's one guy who's like, you know, got a very 80s mustache and sort of longer hair. And then another guy looks like, you know, a character from the Righteous Gemstones.
Daddy, you just threw Jesus across the room.
No, it was a karate person.
No, that wasn't a karate person. That was Jesus.
So I have to say that the mall robbery scene is one of the most confounding sequences I've watched in a blockbuster film. Usually, like, I think a lot of like contemporary blockbusters have a decent sense of like the action's geography because they are kind of focus tested to death. But this and like, you know, the emotional stakes of the action, like, I think Michael Bay can get away with like doing whatever he wants, and like, you know, the end product is like this feeling you get of just like a complete jumbled, confusing moment. But like, I mean, that's what he likes to do. But this was so strange because there are these guys robbing a jewelry place, and then one of them drops their gun, and then someone yells, "Gun!" So he's like running, and there's like Keystone cops running around radioing for them to be caught. And then there are people running up the wrong side of the escalator. And then in the coup de grace of the sequence, there's a guy grabs a child and he's like, "I'm not going back to jail." And like he's dangling a kid off a balcony, and the other robber is like looking at him like, "No, don't do it." And it's very funny. And then obviously Wonder Woman stops everything and saves it. So this is where one of the first most interesting things about Wonder Woman 1984 came out for me. And it's sort of the profound sense of unreality that this movie has. So Wonder Woman is like a very physical comic book character, right? Like, obviously she exists in sort of like the realm of the gods. So she can have these like sort of mythic adventures, but like her movement, her fighting, everything has no impact to it. And she is, it's what they want to do. She's like skating around, basically, on wires everywhere she's going. And I didn't get that sense in the first Wonder Woman movie. Like, the action was pretty okay, passable in that one. Sometimes it was, you know, a standout. But this one, it's like, man, it is very, I don't know what they were trying to go for. I think they're trying to do some kind of homage to the Wonder Woman TV show. Where, you know, everything's just kind of like not a serious like blockbuster in terms of its action, but I didn't like it. I don't think there was a greater meaning communicated through Wonder Woman just kind of skating around and not feel like she's doing anything, because like I mean that's one of the key things about a superhero movie, I feel, and for some reason I'm going to Superman Returns for this, but like the feats of like physical strength that Superman has in a movie like Superman Returns, like saving the passenger jet and like putting it down in that baseball diamond, getting shot in the eye and having it like crumple, so sick, right? Like, I mean, Superman Returns is a mixed bag of a film, but Wonder Woman doesn't really have a chance to like, you know, shine in an action sense, and I feel like that's a key aspect of the character. Of course, like her sort of interior emotional life also gets sort of excavated in this, but it Wonder Woman is also like a sword and sandal character, so not having a chance for her to like kick ass in that way, I thought was like a big disservice to this film. Also, there's this ongoing story thread with Wonder Woman in these new DC films where her sort of like first time stepping out into the public consciousness as Wonder Woman the superhero was in 2016 in Batman versus Superman. So her entire career from World War One to 2015, I guess, or like right before, is like she's a secret. Like only a couple people know about this, you know, weird Amazon warrior. So they need to keep up that whole thing in this movie. Like she takes off her tiara and like throws it to break some cameras and is like telling people to shut up about what they've seen today, which isn't cool. Like it isn't fun. And like, I know it's just to maintain continuity, because that's what they decided to do with like the Snyder movies. It's not fun. It doesn't add anything to Wonder Woman. If anything, it takes away from it, because like Wonder Woman is a character who's about like, you know, the truth, and she's a paragon of justice, and she's about like, you know, standing up for what's right and everything else. And like in a comic run of Wonder Woman that I'm really enjoying right now, the Greg Rucka Wonder Woman, she's like the ambassador for Themyscira, and like she lives in DC and she's like working at like the UN and working with these other governments, like trying to, you know, do what's best for her people. So you get to see her like in public doing good. But in these movies, it's like, no, she needs to hide. She needs to hide. And it's like, why? Like, it's never clearly communicated. Like, she chooses to like hang out in secret, I guess, because that's how it was written in BVS. But like, it's not good. It's not a good creative decision, IMO. So I referenced sort of what Wonder Woman was doing in World War II, and this is where we get our answer for it. So we go to Diana's apartment, and there are some photos that we see of like Wonder Woman's career, and I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, add some history to the character. Like, I always like that, you know, easy world building. But I couldn't make out what one of the photos was, but one of the other photos, I paused on it. I made sure I knew what I was talking about. It is definitely a photo of Wonder Woman at a concentration camp liberation. She wasn't the guard, importantly, but who knows? And like, obviously it's a critique. It's one of the first things that people saw when they watched the first Wonder Woman movie, was like, okay, she fights in World War One and then goes into hiding for like 100 years and then pops up in Batman versus Superman. That doesn't make much sense. So retconning it a little bit to go like, oh no, don't worry, she was helping out secretly during the Second World War is like interesting. But it's also this like difficult spot for me. And this is generally a way that DC handles its characters. Not like as opposed to Marvel, but just, you know, in it of itself, they are often very scared of the characters they have. I hope that this era sort of passes, but like, what's wrong with like Wonder Woman, you know, publicly fighting in World War II? And like, obviously in like DC continuity, the Justice Society of America was like active during the Second World War. And I know this is sort of a question of like, oh, they haven't been introduced yet because they need to get introduced in Black Adam. And it's like, these movies could be a lot more fun if you just like have those little references, and not for like, I mean, the geek part of it for me, obviously I'm cursed with being a nerd, is like, oh, that's fun to hear. But also just in terms of like creating a larger world that these characters exist in, so it isn't just like a vacuum for every film that you're expected to go like, ah, I like this interconnected universe, Warner Brothers. Like, just throw something in there, right? Because this movie does like use well-known DC characters like Cheetah, like Maxwell Lord, in sort of new discordant ways with their comic book representations. So that's another thing that I sort of had an issue with in this movie. We need to talk about Volcel Wonder Woman. So there's this moment where she's like at a table and it's like, oh, are you dining for two? And she's like, no, I'm not waiting for anyone. And then she like looks up at a plane. This gets into some of the shit that I hate about this movie, where it's good that Wonder Woman, like the Wonder Woman film, is about Wonder Woman's like interior emotional life. That makes sense for me, like for a film. But the challenge that she faces emotionally is that she can't live her life without thinking about Steve Trevor all the time. And she just needs Steve Trevor back. Like, yeah, Chris Pine's a handsome guy. And obviously they had a, you know, very strong connection like 80 years ago or whatever. But like, it's so weird that like this Wonder Woman character is that limited. because, like, obviously comics are like this big sprawling world. You can do anything with them. Like, there's no budget except for an artist's time. Like, go nuts, have fun. But, like, in this world with the Wonder Woman films, they've killed off the Greek gods, so they can't really interfere in the stories that much, which is, like, the most fun part of Wonder Woman comics. So it's just revolving around her relationship with Steve Trevor, which, like, okay, Steve Trevor, he's a fine character, whatever. But, like, other, like, male comic book characters are able to, like, sort of move past that or have their relationships change in more interesting ways. Like, Batman is, like, kind of in a long-term relationship with Catwoman right now in the comics, which is interesting, but, like, it's not the central defining feature of, like, a Batman story. But instead, for Wonder Woman, she gets relegated to, like, you know, longing for Steve Trevor to be in her life. And I was really frustrated with the Joss Whedon Justice League movie, because there's a moment where Wonder Woman's like, oh, I know a pilot who would have loved to fly this. And it's like, oh, come on. It has literally been 100 years or more since you met Steve Trevor. And, like, Wonder Woman's, like, an immortal Amazon. Like, she's probably, like, she's had to deal with this before. It's frustrating. But, no, she needs to pine over Chris Pine and, you know, never move on. So that was, that made me sad. So at this point in the movie, we get introduced to Wonder Woman's daytime career as, like, a, like, museum person, an expert of antiquities. And we also get introduced to Barbara Minerva, who is the cheetah. So cheetah in this movie is very bad. So they're doing the geek to chic trope, which I'm not saying it's bad because it's a trope. I'm saying it's bad because it's lazy. Because, like, in the comics, like, Wonder Woman and Barbara have, like, a complicated relationship. Like, it's, and Cheetah is, like, a smart villain, although she does have, like, a bloodlust and hatred of Wonder Woman. So I was hoping to get some of that in this movie, but of course they're just introduced to each other for the first time, because the audience is very stupid and we need to have our hand held through everything. So, like, and again, like, her entire problem is that she doesn't have self-confidence. Like, she is the Riddler in Batman Forever. She's Electro in Amazing Spider-Man 2. And Wonder Woman has, like, an incredible line where she's like, oh, scientists can wear high heels too. And that's kind of, like, the feminism of this movie is, like, you know, women can be, can do all the things the men can. That's kind of it. So, not super happy with that. This is also where we get the first shout out to the FBI, shout out to you guys. Because for some reason, like, the museum is like, oh, the FBI will be over soon to drop off some, like, black market antiques that they got. And then Cheetah is like, ooh, the FBI. I love the FBI. And I was sitting there like, yes, I also love the FBI. I just finished watching Public Enemies. I love those guys. I don't understand anything that they've done poorly. So they find this thing called the Dreamstone, which later we discover was made by some trickster god. But it's not important to the story. So they're talking about how it can, you know, do, it can grant you any wish. And Wonder Woman holds it and she, like, thinks to herself, I wish Steve Trevor was back. And her, like, hair gently blows in the wind and she's inside. But we need to indicate she, you know, she wished for this. After this, we get introduced to one of the most prominent themes in the film, which is putting an end to street harassment, but maybe in putting an end to street harassment in a good way, which, because it gets complicated. So Cheetah's, like, walking home and this, like, drunk guy is, like, yelling at her and is like, oh, sweetheart, let me walk you home. And it's like, oh, this is gross. I hate this. So then Wonder Woman, like, kicks the guy and he, like, you know, careens into a garbage can or whatever. I'm like, oh, that's fine. It was kind of funny. And then, later on in the movie, we'll come back to the theme of street harassment and how it gets treated differently. It sort of confuses the message that it's unquestionably bad. And, you know, you're entitled to kick someone's ass if they do it to you. So after this experience, Barbara decides to take the Dream Stone and wishes to literally be strong, sexy, cool, and special. I took note of the exact things that she wanted to wish to be, and she's that. So then we get this whole sequence of her returning to work, and all the men who ignored her are now like, wow, Barbara, looking good. Damn. Woo. Love you. So she wished to get harassed at work instead of harassed on the street. So Maxwell Lord pops up. He literally just wanders onto the set. He's looking for the Dreamstone because he wants it, because he's not doing well in a business sense. And then there's this one funny little exchange that he has with Wonder Woman where Diana gets to be a, oh, I don't watch TV person, which is like, okay, cool. Thank you, Diana. You don't watch TV. Wonder Woman's a very likable character. Thank you. So Maxwell Lord, he gets a little bit of characterization here. He says, quote, I'm a television personality and respected businessman. And this was sort of the first scene in the movie that I kind of liked, where he's going to his office, which is like not staffed at all, except for one receptionist. And one of his like prominent investors is going to leave the company because he realizes he's getting conned, and he calls him a loser in front of his son. And then Pedro Pascal gets to act in this film, and he's okay at it. And like, his like actual like accent comes out, as opposed to like the one he puts on for like white people, like the people he has to do business with. And I thought that was a pretty good choice for that character. So he is of course a divorced father, and he is not attentive to his son, but loves him. So it's kind of an interesting relationship. It's one of the only interesting things about this movie. So I'm staking a lot on it. Maxwell Lord, he gets the Dreamstone after like this party scene, and he uses his one wish to become the Dreamstone, which is like, okay. So the Dreamstone, as like a artifact in the DC universe, I've never heard of it before. It might be in a comic. But in the comics, Maxwell Lord's abilities are like, he's a psychic, or he has like mind control. Which is cool. And Maxwell Lord is prominently a Wonder Woman villain in exactly one comic, Infinite Crisis. And people were talking about how like some of the reviews for this movie were like, wow, there's a really dark moment in this film. And I assumed, minor spoilers for Infinite Crisis, I don't care. Wonder Woman kills Maxwell Lord. She snaps his neck. Which is a move that they took for Man of Steel when Superman kills Zod. But Wonder Woman has killed in the past. It's obviously not something she does frequently, because she's a superhero. But she decided to take Maxwell Lord's life because he had mind controlled the Justice League, and he had mind controlled Superman, and he could like kill every human being on Earth. And he's basically like, haha, the only way you can stop me is if you kill me. And she's like, okay. And Diana is kind of like, I like her character because she can be like a bringer of peace in conflict, but obviously she's not afraid to fight, and she's able to make certain choices that Batman or Superman wouldn't make. And it creates interesting tension between sort of the main characters in the Justice League. But like, she's not a warmonger, which I think might be the Zack Snyder interpretation of Wonder Woman based on a photo he came out with where she was carrying like three severed heads on a rope. And it's like, oh shit. I hope those aren't like human beings. I hope they're like zombies or whatever, but whatever, who fucking cares? So yeah, I thought that Maxwell Lord was going to be killed at the end of this film, but that doesn't happen. So I don't know why people were talking about a certain really dark moment in this. So there's kind of a, here's where we get into the Steve Trevor of it all. So Steve Trevor died at the end of the first Wonder Woman film, and Diana's wish, of course, was to bring Steve Trevor back to life. She wanted to see Steve. So it's a comic book movie. They could have done this any way they wanted, but the movie chooses through its writing to have The Wish body snatch a guy. Like, there was just some dude living his life, and then his psyche goes somewhere else and is replaced by Steve Trevor. And at first, Diana doesn't see Steve Trevor within him, but then he's, like, talking to her, and then, like, it's just a simple camera move, and then it's, like, she's talking to Chris Pine, which I was like, oh, that's an elegant way to do it, but camera-wise. But the choice to body snatch a guy, and then, obviously, Diana and Steve have sex, and it's like, okay, so that guy, this is still happening to this person's body, but he just blacked out for those days. So obviously that's not good. And I'm sure it falls somewhere on the spectrum of like sexual assault. And it really made me question why they decided to do this. Like, cause with these big studio movies, it's like, how many people have to see this and then go like, yep, sounds good. Especially like, you know, with, you know, thinking what's on Hollywood's mind, like with the Me Too movement, it's just like, cool, we'll do this. pretty fucking bad. So yeah, there's like this fish out of water stuff with Steve Trevor. There's one moment that I do really like in this movie. Although again, with everything that I like in this movie, there is a caveat because I'm like, the delivery was not that great. They're in a jet and then Diana makes it invisible. So I'm like, yes, finally the invisible jet. And it's a really visually nice scene because they're going through these fireworks and everything. But Wonder Woman now has a power to make things invisible. And it's like, where'd she get that? What? Like, I thought it would have made sense if it's like some kind of ancient relic or something, or like a spell that she learns, or like one of the gods is like, I will give you this boon, like in Hades. I've been playing a lot of Hades. But she just like rubs her hands together and makes it invisible. Here's where we get to the culmination of the street harassment plotline in Wonder Woman 1984. So Cheetah is like running. She's still like a human being, but of course later in the movie she fully transforms into Cheetah. And the same guy is like mouthing off at her, and she starts beating the shit out of him. And I was like, yes, yes, this is cool, this is fine. But then the music is like malevolent, and it's like, no, this has gone too far. Cheetah is evil now because she beat up this guy who just like, you know, stalks women in the night and like tries to assault them, because that's exactly what he does in their first encounter. God knows what would have happened to her after that, but now it's just like, oh, it's bad actually if you beat this guy up. It's sadistic and wrong. Even though Wonder Woman does pretty much the exact same thing to this guy. So a very confused film. And then there's this homeless guy that Barbara has a relationship with. He like sits on the stoop of a house nearby hers. And then he comes by and he's like, oh, Barbara, what are you doing? And he's like checking on the guy who got beat up. And it's like, who fucking cares? Like, why is this a plot element? Like, if anything, it would have been interesting if like, it's just kind of left there, or like maybe the movie is like, this is explicitly a good thing, or maybe the music doesn't just emotionally guide the audience through every beat. But you know, that's what we get. So obviously I didn't like that. We follow Max Lord a little bit, and he has the idea that he's gonna like take over all of the world's oil. And it's funny because at one point in the movie, they're like, Maxwell Lord controls like 50% of the world's oil reserves. And obviously, like, that's a bad thing for redistribution reasons. But right now I looked it up and I think OPEC owns 80% of the world's known oil reserves. And when Max Lord is with the Egyptian oil guy, this is where we get into another very weird and bad aspect of this movie. So this guy is Bialian. So Bialia is a fictional country in the DC universe, which is ruled by this person named Queen Bee. And when they name dropped it, it's like, oh, I guess Queen Bee is going to be the villain of the next movie. No, it's used for a weird point about greed that this movie is trying to make. So, of course, the mechanism for granting wishes in this movie is a monkey's paw scenario where you get what you want, but the price is very high, but all of the benefits of that price go to Maxwell Lord. So he wants the Bialian guy wants all of his land back. So he says, quote, "All of my land to be returned, the Bialian dynasty and all the heathens who trod upon it be cast out forever." So, of course, this is like presented, I think, in a very shitty way. So it's like the desire for people to have like their ancestral territory back is framed as like a greedy, self-seeking desire, which will ultimately cause too much chaos. So a big through line in this movie is the absolute evil of social unrest and civil disobedience, because the way that the movie visually communicates that things are not going well because of Maxwell Lord's wishes is like people are in the streets and there's chaos and people are holding signs and like, and it's really scary, right? So especially when it's in the Middle East, it's really dangerous. And then the United States and Russia, I thought the Cold War would take more of a more importance in this story, but it doesn't really. One of the only instances of that is like the Egyptian government is allied with the United States, and Russia is like, we accept the Bialians, and now it's used as like a proxy conflict for the United States and Russia. So all of that is badly handled. And plus, to kind of cap it, it's visualized with like a wall being magically put in place to separate historic Bialia from Egypt. And like, everything we hear is just about how bad this is. It's like, oh, the poorest communities in Egypt have been separated from their fresh water, which is obviously bad. But like, international relations don't work like this. It's just like a cartoon villainy version of this, which, I mean, obviously the direct like corollary in the real world is like Palestinian people who do not have a country to call their own because of Israeli occupation. And knowing that that conflict exists and knowing that the star of this movie served in the IDF and has like posted on several occasions very negative things about Palestinians and very nationalist you know, Israeli stuff, like, it, you have to wonder what's going on. It's not good. So I hated it. And there's also this recurring thing in the movie of like Wonder Woman is losing her powers because she wished for Steve Trevor to come back, which is pretty boring. And obviously Cheetah does not want to give up her wish of being cool, sexy, and hot. So another thing is like Maxwell Lord talks to the president of the United States, who is like generic president. They didn't try to get like a Reagan lookalike, which would have been fun. And the president's one wish is for more nuclear weapons, which is pretty cool. So there's this scene that I thought like, oh, is this one of the only good sequences in the movie? And it's where Diana is having her sort of last conversation with Steve Trevor. And she's like crying and she's like, I can't say goodbye. I was like, this is kind of okay. Like, it's whatever. So then Wonder Woman defiantly says, I renounce my wish. So she gets her powers back and like she like flings herself into the air with her lasso, and I was like, that's kind of cool. But one of the recurring problems in this movie that really impacts a scene like that I enjoyed is sort of how the green screen like really flattens the emotional highs of the movie, of which there are very few. So like Diana jumps into the air or something, and it's a cool shot. And then we cut to Gal Gadot clearly on a green screen with some wind blowing in her hair, and it just looks really cheap. So Wonder Woman also learns how to fly in this. I mean, Wonder Woman flying sort of varies on people's interpretation of the character. I kind of like when she flies, but, you know, I can take it if she doesn't. So it's also the physics of it aren't exactly clear. Like, not in like, this is not scientifically accurate, but it's like, is she gliding? Has she learned to glide? Or can she like go up? Like, can she generate lift on her own? Like, and thrust? I don't know. But it looks like she can, but sometimes she needs like a speed boost. So she like flings herself off a lightning bolt, which is very cool, very metal, which Wonder Woman should be. And this is sort of a point where I was like, what's going on sonically with this movie? The music is so bad. Hans Zimmer, or probably more accurately, a lot of the like interns who work for Hans Zimmer, or like Hans Zimmer has this big studio. So like whenever it says like this music is scored by Hans Zimmer, I'm like, is it? Like, they churn out so many Hans Zimmer scores. It's like people who kind of work for him probably did the thinking behind this and then he approved it. I was like, what's going on? So I recognized the piece of music that was in the like Wonder Woman is flying scene. And it is, of course, John Murphy's Adagio in D minor for the film Sunshine. So it is just that track. I was looking, I think this is from like Screen Rant or something. And I was like, how often does this movie music get used? It gets used all the time. It was in Kick-Ass, Ready Player One, the 2010 Winter Olympics on NBC, Civilization VI, and plenty of other things. But the one particular moment that I recognized it from was from the trailer for X-Men Days of Future Past, which I really liked that trailer. So I was like, oh, like the music literally is just copy and pasted. And there's a lot of good videos about this, but it is a crisis of temp music. And I was Patty Jenkins, the director of the movie. She did like a Q&A thing on Twitter, a watch party for Wonder Woman 1984. And she was talking about how they had used temp music for this other scene where they used Beautiful Lie from the Batman vs. Superman soundtrack, which is a track that I love. I really like that music. And that I think that is probably Hans Zimmer's last good score is the BVS soundtrack. They had that in his temp music. And then they were like, oh, why are we trying to rework this? Let's just put the original track in because it's in like the same universe. Which musically I really like. However, that little anecdote speaks to like how much temp music can like ruin a film, because like the director is editing the movie with this sort of particular sound in her head and then, you know, gives that to the composer and it's like, I'll just make something like this, right? So you have a lot of movies that sound very similar to each other, and this movie I think is a definite highlight of this problem. And yeah, this is sort of where we get into like the third act conflict of the movie. So Maxwell Lord wants to use this like communications device that uses like particles, so he's actually touching everybody on Earth, because this magic requires physical touch between two people. And he's going to make everyone wish for stuff, and then he's going to get extremely powerful from it, but it's also going to like destroy the planet, because everyone's perfect outcome can't happen at the same time, like, which I want to get into that a little bit later. This is really where the Maxwell Lord character really fails. Thank you, Carhorn, for emphasizing that, because he's just so one note, because his only mode in this movie is desperation, because he constantly just wants to acquire more and more. Like, he's obviously like a very weak Trump allegory, and also this like critique of 1980s America, but it's like obviously a cultural critique, not like a critique of capitalist systems. And like the performance from Pedro Pascal is just desperation all the time. He's like, oh, what can you give me? Oh, give me this. And I'm just like, I don't fucking care anymore. And of course, you know, Hans Zimmer low key fell off, so none of the music, you know, adds anything to this. This is also where Wonder Woman gets her Golden Eagle armor. So this was in all the marketing. I think this movie had a fantastic marketing campaign. A lot of the posters and everything I'm very into. I really like the sort of design of those. Do I think the marketing campaign was much better than the movie? But she gets the armor from this newly created character, Asteria, who was like this Amazon who needed to protect the Amazons when they were fleeing captivity from like Hercules and the world of men, because they were enslaved by Hercules in like the canon. This Golden Eagle armor withstood like all of man's armies, and it's like, okay, kind of cool, whatever. So it doesn't really serve a very cool function because, like, Wonder Woman didn't have any powers at one point in the movie, and then she gets her powers back and then decides to put on the armor. But the armor doesn't really give her any special powers because, like, she can fly with it, but she also learned how to fly without the armor earlier in the movie. So it's just like a costume change to look cooler, which or to sell toys, which I understand that impulse. You got to make money. But it would have been very satisfying if, like, you know, Wonder Woman was, like, weakened or something, and then this armor was the only thing that, like, she could use to, like, fight through the end of the film, right? To prove that it's not just, like, physical strength that she needs, but also this, like, courage and everything else. But you could do that, but they don't. And the armor becomes pretty useless because Cheetah is able to, like, rip apart the wings of it. So it's like, okay, like, why did you fucking bring this? Like, just to look cool for fashion reasons. So I guess it's like, okay, whatever. So yeah, she's fighting Cheetah, and it's like a really ugly night CGI fight, just like the first film, which I really thought they would fix. But mercifully, the fight doesn't last that long. But it ends because Wonder Woman straight up electrocutes Cheetah. Like, she's in this water, and she's like, I'm sorry. And then just, like, shoves, like, a power cord in there, and Cheetah is fine. She was, like, weakened by it, but damn, that was cold. I don't think Wonder Woman knew that she would have survived that. And here's a thing that I liked. Wonder Woman, instead of, like, physically defeating Maxwell Lord at the end of the movie, she does a speech about, how she appeals to Maxwell Lord's, like, humanity and his compassion, right? Because she tries to get him to see what his actions have done to the world, and that this sort of, like, unfettered greed is a bad thing, and it's destroying the planet. And then if it, initially he's not impacted by it, but then you realize her, like, lasso of truth is around his leg, and she's actually speaking to, like, everyone who's watching TV, everyone who's got the telly on. Speaking of the telly, there's this great little interaction because they showcase all these people who are, like, getting their wishes granted because Maxwell Lord's telling them to wish for whatever they want. And some woman's like, I wish all you Irish bastards would go back where you came from. And this guy's like, oh yeah, I wish you would all drop dead. and then this woman starts, like, taking a heart attack. And then obviously it's fixed when everyone renounces their wish at the end. But that was deeply funny. Wonder Woman should have been about the Troubles, I think. Wonder Woman should have been in Ireland trying to figure out that conflict. So, I like that Wonder Woman gets to use sort of her compassion and her decency to win the day. That's why I think a lot of people like the Wonder Woman character. And she's able to use the lasso to do a supercut of childhood trauma for Maxwell Lord, where he gets to see, like, him being made fun of as a child because he's an immigrant, and, like, his terrible business idea not getting any traction, where people can buy into an oil company that has no land where oil is on. So I don't know. I liked that approach to Wonder Woman defeating her villain, but of course the problem is, like, the movie isn't really, like, we need to ask ourselves, like, what is the social function of greed, right? Like, obviously greed is, like, bad for, like, a society in general. But of course it's, like, this sort of, like, inescapable feature of being a human being. So we need to build political systems that, like, not just moderate it, but, like, distribute resources potentially accrued through greed or maybe, like, ingenuity or something, and distribute them fairly through the process of, like, you know, labor and giving to people what they need, and making sure the people who create things and generate wealth are very fairly compensated and get to dictate what they do with their labor. Like, that's the kind of, you know, society and economy that we want to live in. But this movie just sort of posits that the 1980s were hyper-capitalist, even though, of course, that's just a cultural thing. Because we live in, like, these processes accelerate, and obviously we're facing climate catastrophe because of the accelerations of capitalism and industry. But Wonder Woman's speech at the end is like, oh, like, I understand your pain, but look at what wanting all of these things does to everyone around you, so you need to accept less for the betterment of society. Which is obviously a problem, because, like, it's not their fault, it's Maxwell Lord's fault for enabling them to put the planet in such a disastrous place. It's almost like a very clear parallel to, like, something like climate change, where there's an easy to identify structural issue of why climate change is a collective problem, because of, you know, the development of fossil fuels, the choices to not pursue alternative energy sources, and the profit motive that creates such a lucrative market for, like, high carbon production. But you could also flip that around and say that it's a consumer error for not, like, shopping with, like, a green sensibility. And that's kind of what this movie is positing, where it's every individual's fault that they are so greedy and so blind to the consequences of their greed that they just keep doing whatever they want. So this movie's moral message isn't about, like, we need to see the suffering in, you know, our fellow human beings and, like, act accordingly and, like, be able to fulfill the needs of our neighbors. It is just like, no, you need to accept less. So at the beginning, I said I wasn't going to, like, get too much into, like, what this movie is, like, actively trying to say about its politics, because this movie is obviously a mess. But I think that, and I don't think the filmmakers are trying to, like, specifically, like, this isn't, like, some kind of, like, secret anti-socialist propaganda campaign. Or is it? When you check the money for it, because obviously there's some fucked up, you know, U.S. security complex stuff going on in this blockbuster, and mostly every blockbuster, because it is very expensive to make movies, and the Pentagon will pay money to these studios if they use their tech and hardware on screen. But this sort of, like, it's interesting to examine the subtext of what's going on here, at the very least. Not because I think it's mostly the product of, like, Patty Jenkins, because I think she has a writing credit on this, and she didn't have a writing credit on the first Wonder Woman movie, where it's, like, this heroic self-sacrifice that we all need to make instead of identifying why these needs exist and what the best way to fulfill them would be. It all just seems like vanity that these people want to fulfill these wishes, right? Like, if someone wishes, I wish I had a roof over my head, is that, like, inherently a chaotic bad thing that's going to create all this social unrest? In the world of this film, it is, because there's going to be some hidden externality that gets, you know, put onto someone else. So obviously, like, greed as a social phenomenon is an issue in a capitalist society. But, like, and of course, Wonder Woman 1984 is not going to address this, right? I know that. I'm not trying to say, like, oh, you know, the Wonder Woman movie should have been socialist. No. Like, it's a Hollywood movie. It can do whatever it wants. But, like, it's, of course, it's interesting that this is the kind of message that we're getting in this kind of film. And through, you know, through the mouth of a character like Wonder Woman, who's supposed to be, like, a moral center. So very sad with that. Not good. Yeah. So finally, I liked how Maxwell Lord got to, like, learn a lesson about being a better person. And it is kind of stupid how, like, his one motivation is just, I want to have it all. And the world is, like, coming apart around him, which he has to be aware of because he has this power to grant wishes, but he doesn't care. And then once he realizes his son will die, he renounces his wish, even though he must know that, like, the entire world is going to die in, like, nuclear fire, because the Russians and Americans are launching at each other because the president wished for more nukes. So like, it took away from the character a little bit, but he does have sort of a nice final moment with his kid where he's like, I'm a piece of shit. I fucked up. I'm sorry. I fucking disappointed you, but I'm going to be better. I'm going to be better. Which, if you have had an emotionally abusive adult in your childhood, you will know exactly what this sounds like. So there's a little moment where Diana gets to chat with the person that she body napped, and he seems to be doing just fine. He's forgotten about all the trauma he went through. And she has a nice little chit chat with him during a you know, holiday celebration. And then there's a little like post credits thing of Linda Carter, which she literally winks at the camera, which is fun. So I wasn't a huge fan of this movie, obviously. I did kind of have fun with it the second time. Like, obviously the plot is very stupid, and the moral of like renouncing your wishes for the betterment of society, like enduring this collective suffering to make other people's lives better, is very bad. And I do not like that. But like, you know, there's not much going on with this. It's a testament both against street harassment and pro street harasser rights. So you can't really get a coherent like final message out of the movie. However, I think that this movie can be enjoyed on the premise of it being a very strange film, but also on the premise that this is potentially one of the final blockbusters we will ever get. Of course, I talked about this on the Patreon, about Warner Brothers' plans with HBO Max and Disney and everything else, and it feels like more and more content is going into streaming where it's more economical for studios to make these projects at a lower price point. And who knows if movie theaters will continue existing after COVID. Very funny. So this might be a very fascinating artifact in the future as one of the last great blockbusters. I think we could all agree this movie was great. Yeah, I'm just very surprised that they released a movie this bad. And especially the early critical reaction to this film was very positive. So, of course, I thought I had nothing to worry about. And then I watched the movie. So, didn't enjoy it. But I enjoyed talking about it with you folks, our very fine Kino Lefter listeners. So, now it's time for Recomradations, the final segment of the show, the fan favorite segment, where I get to talk about media, life experiences, or anything else under the sun that I've enjoyed this week that I want to pass along to you, the Kino Lefter audience. So my recomradation for this week is going to be the Nintendo Switch game Hades. So obviously this got a lot of like game of the year coverage, but I got to it a little bit slow. I really love it. I've probably played like just over 15 hours of it. It's like a roguelike dungeon crawler thing that is also extremely horny and is Greek mythology themed. And the voice cast is really good and the story is fun and all the character interactions are fun. And the combat feels fantastic. And it's a good like game to watch other people play, 'cause my partner enjoys watching me play it. So that's my recomradation for the week. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Kino Lefter. Hope you enjoyed it this week. I will hit you up with a premium episode this week, now that Kino is off its holiday break. So you can find that at patreon.com/KinoLefter just for $3 a month. And you can review the show on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. That would be amazing. If you have a written review, I can read it on the show. And make sure to check out the Discord and the Facebook group. And the links to that are going to be in the episode description. So that's all I've got for you this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. I've got another exciting, fascinating episode next week planned. So yeah, glad to be back. Glad to be doing this in 2021. They said we wouldn't get this far, but we made it. And of course, next episode is episode 100. Big milestone. I'll probably have to do something special for it. So yeah, hope you enjoyed it, and see you next week. Bye-bye.
Kino Lefter is a proud member of the Harbinger Media Network. You can find great leftist Canadian podcasts like Big Shiny Takes, 49th Parallel, Le Plancher de Vache, Habiti Please, Alberta Advantage, Tech Won't Save Us, and The Progress Report on the network. To find out more and become a supporter of the network, head over to harbingermedianetwork.com.